Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome back, everybody. This is so much fun talking to Tyler Merritt, the author of the new book out right now, I Take My Coffee Black. And in it, it is the discovery of a young kid, the adventures of a young man, and the musings of a gentleman who's lived and is living life as a Black man. And one of the great aspects of the story that you tell, my friend, is your seeming difficulty you have with sort of marrying up all the relationship pieces to have them kind of look. We all have our moments, but you seem to take those moments and turn them into episodes. I referenced that point in the first chapter, If She Only Knew, where you go, let me be clear, I also have had a lot of white women react to me because of the complete and utter magnitude of my sexiness. Hot sexy. So tell us about your journey of discovery of love and women as a Black man, and why at times you seemingly have gotten it so wrong. And folks may be looking, and this is why it's important to read the book, because what you hear me saying may sound, oh my God, why are you offending this guy like this? No, this brother tells us his story, and he's honest about that. I did some shit that wasn't really good at times. And it takes a big brother, it takes a man to recognize when that's happened and why it's happened. How does that work for you?
And to talk about it, you know, I think that the part that was hardest for me is to put out a video before you call the cop where I say, hey, I'm a Christian, but then to write a book where I say, let me tell you about the sexual experiences I've had that have kind of messed me up a little bit. And I'm single with no kids. So of course, I'm not a virgin, you know.
And, right.
It was a simple equation, a simple mathematical equation growing up. Being that I lived in Las Vegas and my parents, my dad was gone 5 days out of the week in the Air Force. My mom was constantly working. When you were growing up in Las Vegas in the kind of Nellis Air Force base area, as a kid, an unsupervised kid, you either get into drugs or you get into something or other. I didn't get into any of that, but I definitely got into women, and I lost my virginity at a young age. And to me, and I talk about in the book, this wasn't an issue of taking advantage of people. It's just kids, you know, high school kids just mess around, and you discover, you know, you have no supervision around, you just do what you do.
Right.
And so at a very young age, man, I got a pretty kind of whacked concept of what sex was, and kind of the lack of how it should be much more intimate than it was in my younger age. And then, of course, I have this, and this is where my whole life kind of gets messed up. I then come to Jesus, and there's a chapter in the book that says I was doing perfectly fine, and damn it, here comes Jesus.
Right.
And so then I have this God experience to where suddenly, and for anybody who's watching as a believer, like, sex in the church is like the worst thing you can do. Like, you can come in and go, I smoke crack. And they're like, there's healing for you, you know? But if you come in and you're like, I had sex with my girlfriend last night, they're like, you better get down to that altar and get right, you know? And so I came in to the church, and suddenly, man, it was no sex. And so I was like, okay, this is what God wants. And then I had my first experience with my Christian girlfriend.
Yes.
And we kind of committed to no sex. And then she went off and hooked up. And I don't want to give too much away, but She ends up.
Oh yeah. You know, she. Oh, she. Yeah. She got the. Yeah.
Yeah. So suddenly, I'm not just dealing with Michael. I'm not just dealing with like being hurt by a girl. I'm dealing with being hurt by a girl in the midst of this new relationship with God.
Yeah.
So now I'm not. It's not. It's cosmic now. You follow me? Like now it's bigger than just hurt. It's now me trying to grapple with. But God, you said we can't have sex. But here's this, and how do I deal? And I come from this hood mentality of like hurt people, but now I'm with you, and I'm not supposed to. And that singular incident I talk about in the book ends up like curtailing me into this place of I will never get hurt again. I will never allow a girl to come close to me. I don't care if you're Christian. I don't care. I don't care what you are. I will always be the hurtee. And then I spend the next 25 years of my life not giving a shit about women's feelings, not caring about who gets hurt first. I literally have a whole chapter where it's called You Give Love a Bad Name, where I tell you, like, this girl who thought she was all that, you know, we get to the end of the chapter and I'm like, at least you got, I'm sorry you got hurt. At least it was you and not me. You know, that was kind of how I lived through that.
That was a stunning revelation. That moment in the book, actually for it was, I'll say it this way, it was one of the coldest moments. I mean, it was like hardcore emotional thuggery. Where it was like, oh yeah, okay, well I'm sorry you're upset. Okay. And you know, she's like trying to process and plead and understand. And you're like, bitch, move on, get a life. I'm like, seriously, done. I was like, damn.
And it's the same girl. I had the Brad Pitt conversation.
Well, that's where I was going. It's the same girl that you had the Brad Pitt thing where you're sitting there and you're like, this is the honey and we're going to do this. And no, why did I bring you to Brad Pitt? I want you to look at me later
but,
on.
But what's going on underneath all of that is this mentality of I have these other women I was messing with in the midst of that. And that's when I revealed to the reader, like, even though it looked like I was, you know, doing my thing. And I also, in that chapter, she's a white girl. And I talk about how we go and visit her parents and her parents don't accept me. And you know, at the end of that chapter, I literally said, you would think it was me being mad at her because of her parents not accepting me, that I was so heartless. That had nothing to do with it. I didn't care about that. I was heartless because there was no damn way I was ever going to let a girl hurt me again. I had already put up those barriers.
Right.
And that's who I was. And it showed in everything in my life. Because as soon as I started feeling like that hurt, I was like,
those moments among so many, those were played out in your comedy. They were played out in your music. They were played out in the projects you did. How did it manifest itself outside of love and relationships in the other parts of your life?
Yeah. So when I went to college, a sliding doors moment was starting a band that brought me to Nashville. And every time a band member would move on because they had to, like with their normal life, like, hey, we've been in this band, but now I have to, the guy who I say, he would not be mentioned. He wanted to go be a pastor at a church. And here, retrospectively, right, this doesn't seem like that big of a deal, but the reason why we call him, he ought not be mentioned. And I guess, you know, read the book, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about it because I tell it so much better in the book. But he decided to take a job in Oklahoma and leave the band. But he did not tell me that he was going to apply for this job before he left. So we show up for band practice one night and he sits us down and goes, hey, I took this job in Oklahoma, so I have to quit the band. The rest of the band is having this moment of like, hey, you got to move on. Me? I'm having this moment of fuck you. This feels like betrayal to me.
Right.
This feels like what women do to me, where I don't see it coming. Like this is a hurt that I feel. And though it's a completely different hurt and it's completely unassociated with romance, this taps into that kind of hurt that I experience with women. And so I looked at that dude, and then my other bandmate, who him and I are best friends, we walked out of the house that night. We looked at each other. And on the audiobook, I explain a little bit more in detail. But I looked at Mike, and I said to him, yo, this is Vin Diesel, Paul Walker right here. Like, it's me and you, ride or die now. Fuck that dude. Haven't talked to him since.
Wow. Wow.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, but that was how all of those jacked up emotional female things started playing into my everyday life. If you came close to me and I felt like you might hurt me on any level, I put up a wall and I was going to hurt you right back. And it all culminates in the chapter. Oh man. And when you talk about a hard chapter to write, I've been re-listening to the audiobook again, and I wrote it and I read the audiobook,
right?
And I still like find myself in tears. The second to last chapter is never gonna be president now, aka your husband found my pictures.
I'm moving there now.
And I have this moment in the book, man, where I do something to really, really hurt another Black man. And that is kind of the thing that pushes me over the edge.
Yeah.
Like the whole book, I talk about my mom and how great she was for me. And I have this moment where I hurt this other Black man. And I say it in the book, like, what if he doesn't have a mom to go to?
Right.
Like, and what the fuck have I just did to this guy?
Right.
You know, and it suddenly I'm looking at him going, did I just cause another me? Like, did I just turn you into this stone cold dude that I've been for 20 something years of my life because I can't get my shit together?
Right.
And here's what's the funny part about this. We're talking about this book like this is some romance novel or whatever, but that's what I want people to understand in reading it. Like, this book is more than just, it's more than just how to be an anti-racist.
Right.
Like, I didn't want to write another book about, let me be clear, those are some of the best books. I'm just not good enough of a writer to pull that shit off.
Right.
Like, those are great books. But I instead wanted to write a book that allowed you to walk with me as a Black man so that when you're done with this book, you have an empathy for Black people and for us, even as Black people, for each other in a way that you didn't have before you started.
And
you know?
that's a great, great way to put it, because I think what people need to understand about the chosen title of the book, I Take My Coffee Black, unadulterated, without cream, no sugar, nothing that changes the fullness and the character of it. It is what it is. Because everybody who's had straight up black coffee knows what straight up black coffee tastes like, right? And I don't think America, going back to what we were talking about before, has fully experienced straight up black folks. What they've experienced is all the cream and the sugar they've poured into blackness to make it less black, make it taste better for them. But black people, we don't need to change that character of who we are. We don't need to add some sugar, some spice and everything nice to make you feel better about us or make us go down easier for you. And I think that's where we see a lot of what's emerging out of Black Lives Matter. What's emerging out of the Colin Kaepernick moment? What's emerged out of the George Floyd moment? Out of the you know, Tamir Rice moments? Out of the Breonna Taylor moments? That with each one of those, there's a little bit more of our blackness coming through, saying, "Wait a minute, this shit's gonna stop."
Right.
We're tired of you killing us, miseducating us, et cetera, et cetera. That's all the cream. That's all the sugar and all the other crazy stuff people put in their coffee. So that's what I loved about this book, was the unadulterated nature of it. This is what black coffee tastes like. Okay. Mm-hmm. And everybody, now you're going to have a cup.
And that's why I think with those us Black folks that read this book, we're amening at it, because we're not saying anything we don't already know.
Right.
When people look and go, how do you feel about this current movement, as if this is new, as if it just so happens the stuff that you are now talking about as people not of color around your table, we talk about that shit all the time.
All the time.
You know, I tell this joke about my mom. Somebody said to me, I don't, not to make this super political, but just hear my joke here. My mom, somebody said to me, like, what is it like going home for Thanksgiving dinners for you? You know, somebody asked me this one time, a white friend of mine. And I was like, this during the Trump administration. She was like, isn't it difficult to go home for Thanksgiving? I'm like, not in a Black household.
No, like, no,
it is not difficult. Like, the one of the jokes that I told in Alabama, where I was home for Thanksgiving, my grandma was sitting around the table and all our family was there. It was Thanksgiving. And I said to my grandma, and this to this day is still one of her funniest jokes. And it's just a simple thing. We were sitting there, my mom was sitting next to me, and we're all eating. We just finished praying for the food. And I said to grandma, I said, hey, grandma, you know, mama voted for Trump. And you would have thought I had said the funniest shit in the world, Michael Steele. My grandma was like, right. And the whole table busted up. And if somebody was watching from the outside and would have looked at it and thought, oh, how controversial. No, we're Black folks, man. We're Black folk. We don't hide this shit. Maybe from you.
Nope.
But
never have.
But this is who we are. So us marching in the streets, us screaming, the trauma. And I talk about, there's a chapter called The Tyler Merritt Project, where I do a memoriam of recognizing all of the names of Black men and women who had been killed in the streets since the writing of the book. Man, we have been experiencing trauma for years.
Years, centuries.
And now we're back to the point of watching this shit again on TV. And I talk about in the book of, like, I'm just not built to be able to watch Black people die in front of me. Like, right. I'm just not built for that. And I talk about lynching and how we have a history of trauma attached to us. So just now, because just like how you said, bro, you are just now experiencing who we are as Black people. We've always been there.
Right.
We don't have the sugar. We don't have the cream in us. We deliver it Black amongst us.
Right.
And now you are seeing it. And you might be afraid. You might think we're being aggressive. You might think we're being whatever. But this is who we are. I talk about in the book the Martin mentality and the Malcolm mentality. Yeah. Right. And it's something that I battle all the time, which there's a part of me that wants to be, let's march in the street peacefully. And there's a part of me that's like, whose ass do I got to kick?
Right. Right. You know? I tend to side more on the whose ass I'm going to kick. That's been my journey in politics, which is why I have so many friends and so many Republican friends who love me today. But, you know, but again, that's the interesting part of this story, because it translates not just into, you know, the very thing that we do to get up every day and go out the door, but it's what we encounter when we are outside in the world doing our thing. You know, I tell the story about when I was first elected RNC chairman, that literally 40 minutes after my election in this hall, I walking and this member comes up and, you know, gives me a big hug. I knew who she was. Gives me a big hug and congratulates me. And she says, oh, I'm so excited. Now Blacks will join the Republican Party. And I'm like, okay, first I'm thinking to myself, I'm not a Pied Piper. Secondly, I don't need that pressure. That's not my job. That's not my job to bring Black folks in the GOP. My job is to make a case that they will evaluate just like white folks do and decide whether or not, okay, I want to be over there or I don't want to be over there. My job is not to just go out and sort of kind of round them all up and bring them in. I mean, it is just that expectation game that Black folks, and that's again, part of this story, folks, in I Take My Coffee Black, is Tyler having to deal with the expectations of others, which then get translated into expectations he put on himself that aren't even of his own making or choosing.
Yo, Yo, when I came out with Before You Call the Cops, and I think I may have told you this already offline, maybe, maybe not. There's a line in there where I say, I pray for the president. I do not hate the president, but right. I pray for him. And this was during the time of President Trump. Bro, I have folks coming out of the woodworks, white folks coming out of the woodworks that were on the Republican Party, which I is perfectly fine and wonderful, saying to me, you pray for the president. So do you, can you represent, can you be the black person that represents President Trump to your other black folks? Because you say you pray for the president and now millions of people have heard that. Can you represent that? And with that being said, no, but I think there were still people too that would come to me and be like, man, how can you feel this certain way about the Republican Party, the Democrat Party, this, that, and the other? And I've always felt this way. We aren't monolithic.
We're not.
I have too many incredibly intelligent black friends that are Republicans right. that will sit your ass down and give you justifiable reasons why they are on the right.
Right.
They will give you justifiable, like educated, meaningful, fiscally responsible reasons why their ass are Republican.
Right. Right.
And they will educate you on that as black people.
Right.
You know? So this whole idea of the world coming at us like we are one thing and that we are expected to be one way, that is just not the black experience. Right. That's just not who we are.
It is not who we've ever been. And that's why I Take My Coffee Black, for me, was just a great story. There were moments where I literally laughing out loud. And my wife and others looking at me like, what the hell are you reading? I can't show it to you yet. It's embargoed. But now it's no longer embargoed and everyone can have that moment with Tyler. We're having a wonderful conversation with my buddy, Tyler Merritt, the author of the new book, I Take My Coffee Black. When we come back, we'll have more fun.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
One last question for you before I let you get up out of here to continue to work this book, baby. cathartic process, obviously, right? The sort mm-hmm. of the reexamination and the reevaluation of your life. Sticky moments that not too comfortable, but you know, you put them out there. In that catharsis of writing this book, reexamining, having those moments. And by the way, just please, when you see your mama, please give her a hug and much love to me, because when I would listen to her tell you stuff, all I heard was Maybell. That's my mom, Maybell. From South Orangeburg, South Carolina, just coming with the wisdom and the wit. Yeah. And if you don't get this right, I'm going to whip your ass kind of thing. Oh, yes. But just quick sidebar, share that love. And your dad, strong black man, military. Yes, wears his disappointment sometimes on his sleeve, and that's okay, right? Mm-hmm, you know, that's what dads do. Much love and respect. But that cathartic experience for you, have you gotten to the point after doing all of that, identifying those moments where you know you stepped not just on toes, but feet? Can you go back to He Who Shall Not Be Named and now have that conversation, have a conversation.
Wow. I was wondering if I would ever get asked that question. And here you are, day two of my book being out, dropping gems.
I told you we're here, baby. I told you.
We are right here. Simply put, yes, I can. What's tricky though is And I talk about this in the book. I say this to where I say, I know in this book, I'm calling him he ought not be mentioned. But what you have to understand is, to me, he was like a brother to me. Right. Like, I loved this guy. We started something that would change the rest of my life. I would end up playing music for the next 25 years of my life, even though this was just a 6-year stint for him. I'll be really honest with you, man. And I almost get emotional thinking about it. I've lived so much life since that day that I wrote him off, that, and he's married. I was in his wedding.
You were in his wedding?
I was in his wedding. Man, I'm telling you, we were like brothers, bro. It's been so long that I just feel like there's so much life to catch up on. And I feel like I'd probably cry for the first hour of just how hurt I was, but also how we missed so much of each other's lives. You know, yeah. Like, I don't know this guy's kids or, you know, so to answer your simple question, yeah, man, now this book is out there. He's going to run into it at Target. you know what I mean? You know, I will, and I'm sure I will at some point, which when I do, man, I'll hit you up and let you know how.
Well, let
goes.
Me know, because I think in that first moment, when the two, if you get to that moment, as you said, yeah, you probably spend the first hour crying, but I would almost bet he would be crying with you, because I would bet that as much as I mean, and this is my take from how you talk about him in that. Mm-hmm. Throughout the book, but certainly in those sections where you kind of drill in on him, that he knows he's missed something too. And so that I think what folks will come to appreciate, as I did at the end of your telling of your story of the first part of your life, was that you're now ready to do the rest of it with a clearer sense of vision, better understanding, and that actually can free you up to do the sometimes the very thing that you swore to yourself you'd never do.
Yeah, man.
And so that's what happens when you drink black coffee, folks. You wind up.
Look, before we go, Mike, let me put you on the spot. I'm going to ask you. And, granted, I made it sound like much more dramatic than it actually is. Because not only because of who I respect who you are, but I also know that you give no bullshit. Where would you rank this book? You read a lot of books, man. You've seen a lot of things. Where would you put this in the course of the books that you've read over the past few years? And we'll put it this way. My following is, I don't have the smallest following in the world. I have a pretty decent following.
Right.
I don't know if this book will ever be a New York Times bestseller, but I know it's been in the hands of people I really care about, and I'm so glad I've been able to tell my story to them. Where would you rank this book in the midst of books that you've read over the past few years?
As I said at the very beginning of this, and I meant it, and I'll reinforce it, it is the best thing I've read in the last 10 years. And the reason it is, and I've read a lot of political and you know, my wife dogs me because I take forever to read a book. I take forever. I have the talent. It's a gift, I guess, or a curse. I can read many books at the same time. So mm-hmm. I'll sometimes be reading 6 books at the same time. And
sure.
And they're all very different. You know, I could be reading about War and Peace, and then I can be reading about how you put your panties on backwards. So it's, you know, it just, and both of them make sense to me. They just do.
Right, right.
But this book for me was that good and that important because I saw so much of myself in and out of it. Mm-hmm. The way you told the stories, the way you set it up, the way you kept it real, the way you would hit with slang, but then come back with boardroom. You know, it's just, it was watching this young kid, you know, navigate through life early in this young teenager and this young adult and this older gentleman who's now professionally established, still dealing with a lot of the same ish that he was dealing with. Yeah, that's all of us. And it just, you told it in such a real way that I think anyone, white, black, Spanish, no matter, anyone who's kind of had those moments in their life can identify with them and can stand in Tyler's shoes in that conversation. And so, yeah, that's kind of how it went for me too, you know, and just, and just really kind of connect to it. And I really hope that, you know, the folks who are hearing this podcast, you know, can hear the fun that we're having, but also hear, you know, a lot of the journey that's still left to kind of cover and a lot of the struggle that goes with that, because that's life. And it's not easy, particularly for a black man to strip himself down bare the way you have when you're dealing with life and love and, you know, the men and women in your life. And, you know, it's not just about growing up and having sex and all of that. And, oh, this relationship, mm-hmm. I can just, it's about maturing. It's about recognizing, you know, responsibility and taking it and owning it. And you do that. And I think people will walk away from this feeling better about you and better about themselves. I think they'll just love it. So
I appreciate that, man.
I appreciate you. And folks, I'm serious. I you know, Tyler and I didn't know each other from blip until I got a text saying, hey, would you consider this? And I knew of him because I knew of his work, certainly knew of his viral moment before you called the cops. So for me, it was like, oh, this is cool. Yeah. But then to just get exposed to a brother who walks an honest walk. And I love the fact, and it should tell you a lot, folks, that we didn't spend not one damn moment talking politics today. We talked about being black men, black boys.
Yes, sir.
Having black mamas and daddies. Getting in trouble with black women and white women, right?
Yes, sir. Oh man.
So
I love you too.
And man, I really appreciate I again with a lot of love and assistance. Go out to Amazon, go out to Target, wherever you can, get a copy of I Take My Coffee Black, sit back with a cup of coffee or scotch and just read and have fun. You're gonna laugh, you're gonna get choked up, you're gonna get angry. You're gonna feel relieved, and that's what a good writer does. But more importantly, that's what a good life story does as well. And you've brought that to us, brother, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, my friend. I love you, man.
Love you, man. Well, that does it for our conversation together today. And as you can see, I'm whipped. I'm gonna go lie down now because I'm spent. But I'll be back next time. And when I do, you know what we're going to get. We're going to take it real and keep it real. Appreciate everybody out there doing that download thing. When you know, give me a little 5-star on the podcast rating. We love that too. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele. You can follow my brother, Tyler Merritt. What's your Twitter handle, bro?
At TTM Project, and on Instagram at Tyler Merritt Project.
There you go. Look for the book, I Take My Coffee Black. If you want to get a feel of what you're about to get into, check out those viral videos, Before You Call the Cops and Walking While Black. Gives you a little bit of further appreciation of where my brother Tyler Merritt's coming from. So until next time, be safe, be well. You know what I'm going to say. Get the damn vaccine, right? No shit. Stop pretending.
Yes.
And wear the mask. All right. So we can get past this shit and move on to healthier, better days. All right. I'm out. Later.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to LostGolfBalls.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. LostGolfBalls.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.